This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. So now we have three things: being physically alone, feeling emotionally lonely, and then isolativeness, as in depression. Isn't it kind of interesting that emotional loneliness isn't listed as a clinical symptom of depression? I think it probably deserves to be, but somehow didn't make it into the criteria. That, perhaps, is another episode. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. The Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, has stated that there's an epidemic of loneliness in the United States, and the World Health Organization has declared loneliness as a pressing global health threat, with a mortality effect equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. The loneliest country, according to statistics, is Brazil. The lowest levels of loneliness were observed in the Netherlands, the Czech Republic, Croatia, and Austria. Those measurements were taken in June of 2023. Whether you blame addiction to social media, addiction to cell phones, the pandemic, the political uproar, or even wars in many countries, what really matters is that it exists. For those of you who've been listening to Self-Work for a while, you know that we talk about and focus on, and I suggest, what you can do about it. Awareness that something is a problem is only the first step. Now, you might be saying, what can I do, one single person, about an epidemic of loneliness? In this episode, we'll talk about just that. The ripple effect that Dr. Murthy describes, the power of simple acts of empathy, and Simon Sinek's discussion of the power of asking for 8 minutes and how that can be code for I need to talk. The power of 8 minutes. In our email segment this episode, I'm going to read a response from one of my blog posts that I received a few months ago from a partner who's watching his wife dealing with enmeshment with her mom and what kinds of problems that has caused. I bet there are many more of you out there with just this issue, and I'm going to offer a couple of ideas for him and for you. And of course, I'll have the actual link to the post itself. Let's hear from BetterHelp. Working with one of their counselors would be a great way to address your own loneliness, by the way. BetterHelp has long been a sponsor of Self-Work, and a great one. And of the several online therapies out there, they by far have the most highly rated. In fact, I looked it up to make sure, and Forbes has BetterHelp rated more highly over both Talkspace and online therapy, the other major online providers. Now, you might be asking yourself, so why would any good clinician want to work for an online service? Let me tell you, those clinicians don't have to take care of all the business details, the paperwork, the insurance filing, the scheduling service, none of it. I myself have been approached by BetterHelp several times to join their network. And when I saw the benefits, frankly, if I hadn't already had too much on my plate, I would have joined. You can communicate through text, chat, video, or phone, whatever is most convenient and works for you. And the number one problem that so many people face when considering therapy, that problem is taken care of for you. What is it? How do I find someone? The BetterHelp website asks you questions, you answer them, and then they find a therapist that fits best for you in your area. If you have one session and don't get much out of it, all you have to do is let them know and the process starts over again. It's private, professional, convenient, and affordable. These are licensed professionals, someone who's put years into their training so that they can best help you. And so much of the hassle is taken care of for you. They now have 35,000 clinicians in their network, up from 25,000. So now is your time to choose BetterHelp. And if you use this link, BetterHelp.com/self-work, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. It's BetterHelp.com/self-work. I promise you, good therapy helps. I know. I've been there. It helped me, and it can help you. The Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, has stated that there is an epidemic of loneliness in the United States, and as I said in the intro, the World Health Organization has declared it as a pressing global health threat. But is the epidemic about spending time alone or loneliness? It kind of sounds like both. When I was looking at the research, it was hard to tell which one was which. So let's take a look at both factors. I would guess that an extrovert and an introvert would describe loneliness very differently. Or maybe the distinction would be which group enjoys being alone more, and how does that differ from being lonely? They're two different things. Let's talk for a minute about that difference. Most will say that being alone is more about physical aloneness, a state of being by yourself, whereas being lonely is an emotional state. So being alone is literal, meaning you're not with anyone else for that moment, that hour, or that day. Being lonely, however, doesn't have a time allotment. It simply is. Now, here's where being an introvert or an extrovert seems to matter quite a lot. There are certain people, maybe mostly introverts, who can be physically alone and not be lonely. In fact, being alone, having time alone, is what replenishes them. It's where they find their energy. Now, introverts can be lonely, emotionally lonely, but they like alone time. Whereas extroverts battle being alone to a much greater extent. Their replenishment comes with social interaction, being with people. But does that mean that extroverts never feel lonely? No, of course not. Now, of course, the word never is a huge clue there. Anyone can feel lonely. Extrovert, introvert, ambivert, whatever. Anyone can feel lonely. Now, what's also important to say, all of us, you, could be in a crowd of people, even those who love you, and still feel lonely. Due often to something that you're handling by yourself, or that others don't even know you're dealing with, or you have a relationship that's gone sour, but you're still in it and trying to pretend all is fine. You're aware of not feeling connected. That can be something that you feel from time to time, or something that you feel on an ongoing basis. And certainly, depression is part of that. So let's talk about depression for a second. Isolativeness is a symptom of depression. Purposefully or seemingly purposefully stepping back from social connection, not going where you're invited, pulling back from responsibilities, edging yourself out of any activity that might need commitment. I say seemingly because certainly to the person who's depressed, their sadness or their fatigue or their hopelessness is also adding to the idea of why in the world would I want to subject myself to this, or no one wants me there anyway like I am now. So isolativeness may be more a result of depression, not something they feel like they're purposefully doing. But their depression's voice is saying, why in the world would I want to subject myself to this? Or as I said before, might be, no one wants me there like I am now. Again, depression lies to you, remember? But that's what it can say, and you can isolate. So now we have three things: being physically alone, feeling emotionally lonely, and then isolativeness, as in depression. Isn't it kind of interesting that emotional loneliness isn't listed as a clinical symptom of depression? I think it probably deserves to be, but somehow didn't make it into the criteria. That, perhaps, is another episode. But for the sake of this conversation, let's differentiate isolation, what stems from depression or is a part of depression, from being alone versus the unnerving at times feeling of loneliness. So we're not talking about isolativeness. It's a bit dizzying, isn't it? Too many types. Here are some interesting stats from Scripps News. The study is about Americans, so that's important to remember. And I'm going to quote. The title of the article is, "Why Are Americans Spending More Time Alone?" Quote, the study asks questions including how much time Americans spend working, eating, sleeping, and with others. It's no surprise the pandemic's work-at-home, Zoom-focused zeitgeist increased the amount of time people were alone. But time together was declining before COVID. According to the Time Use survey, the average American spent about 6.5 hours per week with friends between 2010 and 2013. Again, 6.5 hours per week. Then in 2014, time with friends began to decrease. By 2019, the average American was spending just over 4 hours per week with friends, a drop of 37% from 2014. That's in 5 years. Then came the pandemic. In 2021, the last year with available data, Americans spent less than 3 hours each week with friends. So what are we doing with that time? The study found that we're spending basically all of that time we used to spend with friends. We've shifted it into spending it alone. We didn't shift it to our spouse or our kids or, you know, anybody else. So what's going on? Well, guess what happened in 2014? That's when we saw that large drop. Over 50% of the people in the U.S. owned smartphones. So all of a sudden, or seemingly so, you had company even when you were alone. Does that mean even extroverts didn't mind being alone so much because they had their phone? That would seem so to me. One study I found said that extroverts, not surprisingly, use their phones more for social reasons, whereas introverts use it more for what they termed process, which I never quite could figure out what that was. And introverts were more likely to have problems with addiction. So it does seem to say that extroverts were getting their social needs met by texting, by scrolling, by following, by having conversations on their phones. That's kind of interesting. So before all of us get lost, let's boil this down. It looks to me like two things are happening in the world of loneliness. First, we're spending less time with friends and family, whether or not you're extroverted or introverted. And it would seem that the smartphone has a lot to do with that. But our need to feel connected, our very human need to belong, to know someone cares about what's happening to us, somehow those needs seem to be getting ignored or put on the back burner when those needs are actually still very much alive and well. So why aren't we working harder to feel connected? Could it be laziness? Distraction, spending that time alone, and our habits have changed, heightened anxiety due to political and cultural factors, or poor communication of needs. Have we forgotten how to talk with one another? I have several clients who have told me, you know, I'm more anxious. I've never been particularly anxious going to parties or going for coffee with groups or whatever it happens to be, meeting people after work. But now I seem to have lost some of my ability to make small talk or just to get along socially. And I do agree that certainly that's something we have to get into practice again to do. Now, I've written a whole book on a group of people, highly perfectionistic people with intense needs for emotional control, who certainly don't communicate their needs well. So could we possibly be seeing more of that sort of high perfectionism? Do we all feel more pressure to handle things by ourselves? One of the comments on my TEDx talk that has really gotten my attention a lot because it has a lot of likes, she said, well, nobody really wants to hear what your troubles are anyway, so I keep them to myself. Do we have the feeling that other people simply don't care? So let's get down to once again what you can do about it. I have two stories to share that may hold some ideas. The title of this episode began with the word loneliness, but the word empathy came right after that, and there's a reason. I'd like to present the idea that empathy and showing empathy, showing caring, showing appreciation can help heal an epidemic of loneliness. And you can show that caring today, in the next hour, in the next minute, to someone. Let me tell you a story about what our own Surgeon General does. He himself demonstrates this to people when he does presentations. Rather than standing on stage and presenting facts and figures about loneliness, he has each audience member take out their phone, and of course, everyone has one, and then he asks for each one of them to take the next minute or two to text someone that they're grateful for in their life and tell them of that gratitude. how you've appreciated their kindness, their knowledge, their patience, their wit, whatever it is that you've truly benefited from. And when finished, hold up your phone with the light then facing the stage. As the audience watches light after light after light appear, they begin smiling, realizing that they're creating a wave of gratitude, a wave of caring, a way of stopping to notice something that only really takes a second or two. That's the ripple effect that I mentioned in the intro. The same exercise could be done to message someone who's shown you empathy, who has listened, who's let you know they care. I thought this was a beautiful story and something you can actually almost see in your own mind's eye. So here's the second idea. I never listened or read too much about Simon Sinek, although I've known who he is. He's a really great podcaster. He's a thought leader. He's very well respected. And in a recent episode of, I believe, his podcast, which is called A Bit of Optimism, Simon went deep on this topic with his longtime friend, celebrated chef and author, Christina Tosi. They explored the significance of asking for help and being there for friends in need. Their conversation shed light on a simple yet powerful lesson. The act of reaching out for support is not only normal, but also an essential part of our shared human experience. And what I'm saying today, it's an essential part of us not feeling lonely. Basically, Simon told the story that he encountered a friend and asked how they were. To his surprise, the friend revealed that they'd been struggling with depression. Simon's immediate response was, why didn't you call me? And she said, I did. He looked back on her text and he said, no, you didn't. And I'm not going to remember these exactly. He found texts like, gosh, when you get a minute, let me know. Or kind of chit-chatty texts, nothing that would call attention to the fact that she was struggling with depression. So it sparked for him what he called an eye-opening realization about the subtle ways in which people ask for help. What she said was something like, yeah, I texted you to ask what you were up to or something like that. But obviously, he did not get the message. So the two of them came up with a code. That code is, do you have 8 minutes? And that's their code for, hey, I need to talk to you. I'm struggling. Do you have 8 minutes? So now studies are popping up everywhere that 8 minutes can make a world of difference in levels of happiness and a sense of connection. We have to remember to do it, to provide it for others, and ask for it ourselves. Do you have 8 minutes? You know, I frequently tell people that I think it's quite an honor to be asked for help, even if it's just for 8 minutes. You can do something about this epidemic of loneliness. You can let someone know you need 8 minutes. You can spread the code to your friends. You can offer 8 minutes to someone else. But you can be part of the difference. You can be a part of attacking this epidemic of loneliness. So you're not so lonely, nor are the people you love and care about. One of the most viewed posts on my website is one on enmeshment, which I've talked about before here on Self-Work. It's when a parent's emotional need for their child dominates the relationship. And there's often no real out or win for the child because the parent never becomes truly happy, even though the parent says to the child, you make me so happy. And yet no child can make a parent happy, right? So you feel very special for a certain time because you're the chosen child, but you also carry around a heavy weight of failure and a job that can seem never ending because you're not supposed to really have a life of your own or not much of one. I've done a podcast on enmeshment and I'll certainly include the link there. But here is what he wrote to me after he read the article. This was helpful and confirming. My wife gets calls from her mother 5 times a day or more, every day, for as long as cell phones have been ubiquitous, which means they've been around. And now we know that since 2014. She spends the majority of her work breaks and lunches on the phone with her mom, including disruptions while she's working. And it's never important stuff. It's more like gossiping about her brother's every move. I had to put a stop to mealtime calls, calls when our family's riding in the car together, and my wife abruptly cutting off our conversations when her mom calls, though this still happens occasionally. She also goes to their house 2 to 4 times a week and will hide trips from me by packaging them in with a trip to the grocery store. 95% of the things she does for them, they could do for themselves. And her help is never asked from a position of humility and gratefulness for her time, but rather, "I need you to do this today" position. She has such a big heart, but shoulders so much guilt to the point of being brought to tears at times. A part of me feels selfish for bringing this up to her, because ultimately, I'm asking her to spend less time with her parents. But I feel like our marriage and her mental health are on the line. Again, thank you for the clarity on the subject. Here's my answer to him and maybe to you. This listener or reader, he's a reader, has a problem, obviously. He can clearly see this dynamic, and his wife cannot or hasn't as of yet. And it sounds as if she, in not recognizing the enmeshment, she's simply doing what she's always done. I frequently tell the story to those I'm seeing who are enmeshed that when a therapist who I greatly admired hinted that my mother was manipulative, I got up and walked out of his office. I was so angry and felt highly protective of my mom. But the very intensity of my indignation was a sign to me, finally, that something was wrong, and I needed to look at things from a different perspective. No one could have made me see it until 2 husbands and several therapists told me there was a problem. Now, not all of those people could be wrong. So what can this man do? I hear that he's trying to set up rules and or expectations, but that does not sound as if it's working. So I'd suggest he approach her differently. "Hey, you know, I'm concerned about how hard you work to do things for your folks, and I read an article that reminded me of you and your family. Would you be willing to read it?" If she agrees, then also say, "Hey, this therapist who wrote it said that therapy really helped her see things that she didn't, and she was in the same kind of family. You know what? I'll support you going to therapy. I'll keep the kids or whatever to make that possible. This is my idea. You can support her, but not force her. You have to be her partner, not another parental figure who's setting down more rules that now she must follow. The hiding that you describe sounds like y'all are beginning to develop, or have not already developed, a parent-child dynamic going on, and that's not going to help anything. She's got to begin to understand on her own the complexity of what's going on, and that's not easy. Now, the two of you could go into therapy yourself, and that might be even more helpful, so she doesn't feel like she's the problem. But here's my idea. Simply support her and try to be patient. These are tricky families to try to understand." Thank you all so much for being here at Self Work. It means a lot to me. Join me on my Facebook group at facebook.com/group/selfwork. Don't forget, we have some Zazzle merch. We have a t-shirt with Self Work on it or Dr. Margaret. We've got coffee mugs. We've got iced tea mugs, because, you know, I'm an iced tea drinker. We've got everything. And I want you to know that it would really help Self-Work out, at least monetarily, for you to buy a little something for a friend, for yourself, for a loved one. Doesn't mean I'm going to be a household name, but it's a way to support Self-Work. Also, you can subscribe at drmargaretrutherford.com and join my newsletter group, where you get a newsletter once a week. That's all, I promise. And it's a great way to keep up with my blog posts, with these episodes, with anything else that might be going on that I think might be interesting for you to know about. They come in on a Monday morning and you don't hear from me again. So that's drmargaretrutherford.com, and you'll see subscribe here. And that's what you can do. Again, my gratitude to you for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.